space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the starship Enterprise. Its five-year mission, to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life, a new civilization, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Greetings, salutations, and welcome to Retrek. I'm Captain Jim, and with me, of course, Sir Admiral Elliot.
Hi there.
And Dr. Squee.
Dragon!
And Admiral Elliot is going to start us off with some Trek news this week.
We have got Trek news. I posted something on the Retrek page last night. I can't get any confirmation on that. So I think it might be somebody who is actually spamming a page and I've jumped on it.
Right.
So, okay. But I have got some definite Trek news because I follow Anson Mount on Facebook.
Oh, yeah.
And Anson Mount was posting yesterday how he's looking forward to being back in Canada for the fall this year for the start of filming of season 4 of Strange New Worlds.
Right.
So before it's been announced by Paramount, Anson Mount has already let us know that we are getting season 4 of Strange New Worlds.
Well, I mean, apparently he had to let it out before someone noticed that his hair was starting to interfere with their low-flying aircraft. So they were like, well, clearly he's going to be filming. All right, okay, I'll announce it. Shh.
That's it. You can't hide the pike hair.
No.
So anybody who doesn't follow Anson Mount, I would strongly recommend you do.
Get the inside scoops from Anson Mount.
Oh, and our buddy's here. Hello, David. Greetings.
David.
Lagrangers.
So we are here to talk about Lagrange or Lagrange Point, which is the latest episode of Discovery, the penultimate episode of all of Discovery. But before we do that, we have to answer this week's burning question, which is, of course, did she say the thing?
She didn't, but and it is even better this week.
Yeah, there was no let's fly, but there was... Let's do this.
Yes. My patting of the armrest was in tribute to that fine delivery of that as well. Like, just he didn't just say it. He kind of like, let's just do this.
Yeah, he was now ready to go.
Yeah.
So we like Raina.
We do like Raina. It's a shame that we're only getting Raina in the final season because I want.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind more Raina, maybe Starfleet Academy, who knows, but...
And you know what? I've altered my buddy cop movie, TV show that I once says, Admiral Silver Daddy Bear, now with Raina, and you've got the budgie alarm clock guy. He's the guy in control, he's back at the station house. He's the guy who knows everything.
Yeah, guy at the desk.
Yeah, oh, he's the one, yeah, but it's like that station would not run without him. That's that guy's job, you know.
Well, we know that. I mean, the 32nd Century doesn't run without that guy, so...
I mean, and he was at that desk for at least 30 of those centuries, I believe. Like, he was just sat there. Just he reincarnated several times to be there at that point.
Yeah, he's a good one. I hope that he's got a cult following beyond just us. But,
I'm happy to start the cult here.
Lagrange Point, then, the penultimate episode, Jonathan Frakes directing, and... As soon as we start, Frakes has got into his spinny camera because you start with this scene and the camera's spinning round, doing 360s and all sorts and zooming all around. And actually, nothing particularly exciting's happening. It's just a really over-the-top visual flourish to get us into the episode.
That's just Frakes saying Frakes is in the house. That's what that is.
Yeah, that's it. Then it's just Saru turns up and gets a bit of a briefing on what's been going on. It's nice to see Saru back. So clearly his commitments to promoting Hocus Pocus 2 were done at this point and we could get him back in the show for the last couple of episodes.
I mean, it's nice, but can we just, like, because it's a very small part of the episode, just take care of Saru's kind of like art through this, because
yeah, we can.
Even though they did the twist at the end that she wasn't protecting him, it was more that she was worried that he would be too kind of emotional about it. But still, it felt a little bit just like a reverse of what they did before. Don't get me wrong, those two are very charming. I can watch them on screen all day, but it's like, all right, I mean...
They've not given him a lot to do, have they? No. They've just sort of had... It's almost been like a sort of comedy like, of manners and misunderstandings.
Yes.
They're not involved in... You don't see Saru get out there or anything. All you see is these little, this little scene with them on the Starbase. And I wonder if this is one of the scenes that went back and reshot.
So possibly,
After they decided that it was being cancelled, that they wanted to bring bits in for Saru to tie up his story.
We better give Saru a little bit more. Yeah, I mean, hopefully it's going to finish with Saru's wedding. And that was quite a nice bit where Michael sort of made a joke like, well, I'll have to come back because I've got a wedding to go to. And that was nice.
I would have just stuck with that. I would have just had, it's like, he gets the information that this girl's in danger. He's worried. He has that nice chat with her. And then later on, you just get his, I always forget her name, but his Vulcan.
I do as well. Sorry, I can't.
Vulcan Brightby just gives him a nice, like maybe even just a thing about like, oh, I'll miss you kind of like, and just talk about their feelings for a little. Like, yeah, just have it just being that. Just, it doesn't have to be anything else.
Yeah, it seems like they're trying to inject little bits of conflict, but there's not much of a conflict. It's just, oh, well, I care about you and I care about you, but we're both professionals and we can put the mission before our emotions. Like, okay.
Yeah, which we established last week.
That's normal Starfleet.
So nice to see them.
Starfleet, isn't it?
Yeah, nice to see them, but give them something to do.
Yeah,
would be.
And it doesn't have to be conflict.
This is why I think that it's maybe one of the scenes that they've gone back and filmed.
Maybe,
And
they have said that
they've had to shoehorn in.
Frakes filmed all the additional scenes as well. So there's ones for this episode, but the additional stuff they filmed for next episode, Frakes filmed them as well.
Because if you think about it, it's kind of like ironic because once upon a time, Gene Roddenberry didn't want any conflict whatsoever in Star Trek. I feel like it's almost like they're trying to force conflict in there where it doesn't belong and it doesn't really happen.
I think it was just to give them something to do, but like you said, we'd have been happy with just a character beat rather than...
They can do character beats in Discovery. I forgot about that. That's apart
from that. They do character beats later on in the middle of the battle, but we'll talk about that. So the other thing we set up at this point is that the other Primarch that we mentioned, the one who Reyna has a history with, that they pretended was coming for the progenitor's technology, is actually now coming for the progenitor's technology.
Yeah.
So I feel like we're going to set up Reyna kicking some ass next week, which I hope we do get.
Yeah, he was just delightful. And it's like, I did like it. Sorry, I'm probably skipping ahead a bit, but it was just a lovely bit where, like, there's that kind of bridge officer who goes, like, Tilly's goes, like, notice he doesn't use the seat. And the guy goes, yes, we've all noticed it. And I get the feeling that as the catty guy who notices everything that's happening, it's like, oh, and have you heard Tilly's dying ahead? Sorry, you are Tilly. Sorry, I shouldn't have said that to you. Like, he's the cosmic guy. Like, you know, he's like, going to be friending Juicy.
Is that a bit like the Tories slagging off the MPs for not going out canvassing and accidentally sending the email to the ones that are slagging off?
But yeah, no, I've seen this guy, like, I know he's been in a few episodes here and there, kind of peppered in like a few of the new bridge officers, but it's like, yeah, just from that one scene, I was like, yeah, I've got you. I know who you are. You're the one who,
he's that guy. Day,
you need some gossip. You go to that guy.
Have you noticed that the captain always takes Book on away missions with her?
Yeah. And I don't think it's protocol for the captain to go on every away mission. I mean, I'm not saying anything. I'm just telling you what's happened.
And this is my most sort of egregious point of the episode for me, is that before we even get to the credits, they get the plan locked in. They know where they're going. And Michael says, let's jump. Now, I just feel that that is a deliberate... It's mugging off the Let's Fly fan base.
I think that's actually mugging us off.
Well, yeah. You know,
I actually think this is them getting us back for all of the copyright infringements we made at the Sci-Fi Weekend of this year.
It could be, but I think what they need to remember is that the Let's Fly community is bigger than just this podcast. It is.
Yeah. I mean, I'd go further than this. I think they've monkeyed around with us on so many levels. Because first of all, she doesn't say Let's Fly. Second of all, let's jump. Yeah, and it's not going to warp. It is a jump, which we say Black Alert for. So it's not even Let's Fly meant to be there. And then they tease us Let's Fly is going to be incorrectly used for a Black Alert situation.
Yep.
And it's not even used. It's nothing to do with anything is what it is.
It's just not good enough.
And you know, the guy at the back was going, it's like, do you know, she's not even meant, she's meant to say Black Alert. This isn't even a Let's Fly situation.
Black Alert.
You know. He wasn't happy about Black Alert.
Well, you know what? With the letter off, if she'd have said Let's Fly, but Let's Jump is just sticking two fingers up at your family.
I mean, even then, I'm as fan as anyone here and the wider community are of Let's Fly, but I want it used in its correct context.
We want it in its correct context, but we would have let it slip.
You would have let it fly. Is that what you're saying?
We would have let it fly in its context.
That pun was so good. I mean, I can't, I'm not going to argue.
An incorrectly used Let's Fly is better than no Let's Fly.
it's expert punmanship, but that's it.
Paramount just need to be really careful because you cannot antagonize the Let's Flyers. This is the warning. I mean, they've had the warning now. We expect better next week.
We expect better next week. And if it's not better next week, we will not watch any new episodes of Discovery.
No, I was going to say, if there wasn't one more episode, then we'd be calling for its cancellation, quite frankly, after this show.
Yep. So there you go, Paramount. If you're listening, which of course you are, you've heard from us now, and we expect more. So they arrive, and right in the middle of the two black holes.
Right in the middle, either they're off target by a bit.
They're off target a bit, yeah.
And wouldn't a black hole... Look, I know, like, they're in the future, they've got wonderful tech, but still, it's two black holes. If you're in the gravity of a black hole, you can't get out of it. There's no... Like, that just... This seems really,
you
like...
You can if you eject the warp core.
Yeah,
I mean, I know they don't eject the warp core, but I'm pretty sure we've seen an escape from in Star Trek 2009. Don't they escape from a black hole by ejecting the warp
core? There's usually some shenanigans like ejecting the warp core. You're right, they just basically steer out of it.
Yeah. Well, what we'll say is that because they had two black holes, they'd have been pulled both ways, so maybe they...
It's like that they were in the middle of the black holes and it was creating this kind of one-shot deal of getting out there. I would have let it go. But it's like they said they were caught in the gravity well of one black hole and they had to steer to the gravity of the other black hole to escape. And that's just...
Yeah, they had to sort of get in the Lagrange point between the two.
I'm all for a little bit of flange when it comes to my science in Star Trek and like even bullshit explanations, but this just seemed to have not like it just really I don't know just for some reason this one seemed
didn't really register it, but you know what,
I think they probably shouldn't have called them black holes because they were too small for black holes.
Oh
yeah. And they didn't do the homework, it felt. It just, I don't know.
They looked very much like the pictures that we finally got of what black holes really look like, because they've managed to do that.
Yeah, yeah. But
they were far too small for what we've become to know the size of black holes are.
Oh, sorry. We got a bit of science from David here.
Oh, there we go. No,
that's what Lagrange is. It's the point of equilibrium between massive gravitational pulls. Yeah, which I think they established they weren't in. They were to one side of it. I'm not saying like it should be something we should be able to do after they explain it, but usually Star Trek's really good at looking into a problem and even naming the solution after the problem sometimes. It's like, oh, the black hole compensator, or whatever. You know, there was just no... They didn't give me anything to explain.
Yeah, I think if it had been two gravity wells or something else, or two other gravitational anomalies of whatever trick you want to pull out from the umpteen different ones and have worked better than sending you black holes, because I think what we know of black holes scientifically, these didn't fit that.
But thank you, David, by the way.
I do not know enough about science, so I was happy with this. It didn't bother me.
David is perfectly right about what the Lagrange point is, but the point, I think the point we're trying to make is that it just wasn't right because we know how black holes work.
I will agree with you. I do not know enough to know whether they got it right or wrong, so...
And we've also got our two new people who are at the helm now, kind of, it seems like, every week. And there was a weird bit, like, I don't know, maybe it was just something I overpicked up on, but where the one who's been featured a bit more, she seems to have more of the lines to on the left side of the screen. Asha, is it? Or something like Asha?
Something like that, yeah. I don't know the new bridge crew, unfortunately.
There was a weird bit, though, where she gets given the order, and then she looks to the other helms person, who looks back and just nods, and then she gets on with it. Like, she's...
Yeah, it's like...
It was weird. Like, I mean, it feels like there's something we should know about them.
I picked up on that as well. She was given an order by the captain to do something, and in a life-or-death situation, and instead of doing it, she turns around to whoever it is who sits next to her.
Yeah.
Waiting for confirmation that she can do what she's just been ordered to do.
I read that as kind of a friend sort of giving a reassurance, like, you've got this kind of thing.
I mean, that's possible, but it felt like there was a scene which got cut where they explained why they were, like, one of them's doubting themselves. Or, you know, like they had with
Adira.
You know. Depner with the...
Depner, when she had PTSD for a couple of weeks, that
got better.
Yeah, exactly. But it's like, in 2 weeks, she was just fine. But it felt like a situation like that where she'd been doubting herself and she needed reassurance. It's like the first time that again, I'm going to call her Asher. I think it's something close to that, if it's not correct. But the other week, where she was going, it's like, oh, well, I was born to do it. It felt like we should already know her. It's like that's... Yeah. It's weird. It just felt... It feels a bit...
It's like Sea Shift that have always been there, but we've never met them because we always watch A Shift.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you used I think it was you, Jim, who used the parallel to Chekhov before, but when Chekhov first appears, he does sort of feels like gets a first scene where he's kind of established, and it's like...
Yeah.
And we get to see him on his downtime, which we never do with any of these guys, because apparently they just work. They're just very good at their job.
Well, it's actually, like, I know Voyager did it a couple of times, and you've seen it a couple of times in Next Gen, but it's amazing how often issues crop up in an eight-hour window of the day. And if you're under Jericho, a six-hour window.
Yeah.
You've got to fit in Delta Shift.
The Breen steal the progenitor's technology. Well, not steal it, they salvage it, I suppose.
Now, I want to address this as well. So the jumping, they know that they've got 15... From when they jump, they know they've got... When they're told they've got to jump, and that takes 4 or 5 minutes. Let's say 5 minutes. So they've got 10 minutes left after they arrive, before the Breen are going to get there. But the Breen don't know the secret to how you manage to find the tech.
Well, they don't know the secret to whatever it is. I presume that's going to come into play next week.
Right, but they're just warping. And, like, Discovery's got there, so it's managed to sort itself out. And then they have a bit of a chat. Instead of grabbing hold of the tech and getting out of there.
Yeah, they did. They kind of brought that on themselves, I think. Like,
no, you're in a tight, massively time-sensitive situation.
Yeah, and it was kind of, they just watched it happen. They were like, oh, the Breen are getting it. They've got it.
They're still talking about it. It's only Rayner who goes like, no, too late. They already got, like, you know, he's the only one who snaps it back to sense. And then, this is the bit which annoyed me. Elliot's completely right on that point, but I didn't pick up on it, but you're completely right. But then, if they go, it's like, oh no, they've got away with everything. And then the line which they go into credits with is Burnham just going, well, we'll have to get it back. Like, that solves everything. All you've said is everything that we already know is you've got to get the thing back.
It was
that's not a line to go into credits with.
It wasn't like she had the perfect opportunity here to just do a Michael Caine and go, it's all right, lads, I've got a plan.
That would have been lovely.
Oh, that would have been good.
We've got to get it back. Well, we already know that. It's like there's a line a little further down after the credits where they're talking about, like, well, we'd have to get on board of the ships. And she goes, well, that's what we'll have to do then. They just said that. They've literally just said that. Okay, you've got a plan. That's what you mean. I've got a plan. Yeah, but, you're just restating what he's already said.
Oh, but that's it. Like, and it is. It's Michael Caine did this so much better. And it's all right, lads. I've got a plan.
Her name's even Michael.
And you know that he does. But this, like, oh, we'll have to get it back then.
Yeah. Well, it means nothing.
It means nothing in this big fuck off shit that you had to run away from previously because it just twats you. You have no defense against it when it fires.
And if you don't mind me wrapping the next scene into this, because it kind of follows straight on, but it's like, and her solution is basically, oh, well, we'll just go on board. Like, we'll get a shuttlecraft. Like,
I do
the defenses are that shit that it's that easy. Like, I know they've done some scans and stuff, but.
I do like that we get the classic heist movie, like, let's plan the heist, then let's do the heist.
They actually blindsided me on this, because the heist goes ahead and it starts. And normally when you see the heist going ahead and it starts, that's sort of like how they think it's going to go, and then you have something happens, and then, it really starts what you do. And they didn't do that. It just played straight into it.
No, it just went straight into it.
On the heist.
Well, the majority of the episode is the heist, yeah.
I mean, I love the heist, but, like, let's not skip over the fact they have that wonderful scene around the table where apparently now all Tilly has to do to become a good teacher is suddenly, without anyone teaching her anything, just go, it's like, hey, do you know, I think you're pretty good. And suddenly someone's a magic, like, that works in Adira, so she's now great, and, like, she's confident, and she goes, like, I'll go on this mission. Now, this is the scene where, like, just I know we take the mickey out of Michael, but she makes the right call, because, damn it,
it's almost like we take the Michael out with her.
Well, no, I don't want to go there, because, you know, just let me make a serious point here, because, you know, because, damn it, obviously worried for his adopted child. He doesn't want them to go off on this dangerous mission. I get it. But he goes, like, well, I'd be slower, but I could do the decoding. And Michael correctly says, time is of the essence. We don't have any time for your personal bullshit. We're not going to get bogged down in any personal stuff.
Yeah.
We've got a time-sensitive mission, which cannot be stopped for any personal reasons. And she's right. And I'm glad she sticks with that throughout the whole episode.
Yeah, absolutely.
I look forward to talking to the rest.
It just goes so smooth afterwards.
I look forward to talking about the rest of the episode where she doesn't do anything to ruin that.
Joking aside, I did enjoy that, like, how Stamets is clearly worried about it. And you've almost got Culber being, like, the more grown up of the parents, being like, no, they're all right, they've got this. And Stamets is the one who's like, oh, I don't like the sound of this. I thought that was really well played by all three of them with this family dynamic that they've got.
Okay, I thought
really good.
I'm a little bit annoyed because they've done this whole plot line with Tilly, like, just with that in the mix. Sorry, my camera for some reason keeps on switching off. They've done this whole plot line with her that she's struggling to be a teacher. And then I know I said this the other week, but I still can't see anything that's happening to her, which is making her better. She's just suddenly better on the Discovery, which actually points out that maybe she shouldn't be a teacher if she's good on Discovery.
Yeah, maybe she should have just stayed on Discovery. But she does get promoted to first officer again.
Yes. I was off to say that this thing about teacher is obviously because she's off to be in the Academy series. I'd be very surprised if she's not going to be a prominent character in the Academy series.
Yeah.
And it's almost like they're trying to shoehorn in that she's a good teacher without actually doing any groundwork. And I'm just going to say it, it's really bad writing.
You can't just go,
right, Tilly is the teacher. Right, let's have her say a couple of lines and that makes you a good teacher. No, that is not how you become a good teacher.
Yeah, they've not shown her becoming a teacher, not since last season.
It's really lazy writing.
And it's also, in terms of making a Rayner's first officer, it's like, but we've gone out of our way this season to establish that Reese is a lieutenant commander and has been showing a lot of, you know, we've got so much more out of Reese than we have before, and he clearly outranks Tilly by quite a bit. So wouldn't Reese make sense as your first officer?
And also, they never do it.
And last week we saw him able to hold his own against the Bruin when he was left in charge. So why is he not over this week?
I'd also throw in as well, like, we've never had a scene where someone's going down and they don't request a first officer. It is done, like, to your point, it's done by rank. There's not a thing of, hey, could you be my first? That's never a thing. Why is that now suddenly?
And also the fact that this, on paper, is no different to any other away mission that Michael's been on over the last 5 weeks. So why does Rayner feel the need to establish a first officer? Do you know what I mean? Like, it's not, Michael's not giving up command of the ship at this point.
Can we also
why do they feel the need to do this more formal? Right, well, you're my first officer, you're blah blah blah. So, well, she'll probably be back in 5 minutes if the heist goes okay.
Yeah, it's
just weird. It's almost like, look, we know the series finale's coming. Let's give it more stakes.
I think it's really lazy that how they've done this, because by rights we should have had Reese there as the next in command from Rayner, supporting him while she's away on the away mission, and that should be a normal thing that happens every time the captain decides that every single mission I've got to go on for reasons, which we've talked about lots. But I honestly think that the reason that we do it here with Tilly is just to give Rayner some really great lines that he can say to her.
And he is brilliant.
I think so, yeah.
Honestly think that is the reason they've done it here.
I'm sure it is.
There's also something I've noticed they're doing with Rayner, which again, it's Rayner. I'm more than happy with this, but it's kind of it was noticeable to me in the difference that never before has Michael been turning to Saru, or, like, you know, there's never been a thing of the first officer tend to confirm. Like, every time it feels like Burnham's giving an order when she's on the bridge now, it's like she goes, Rayner. Like, it's almost like she checks him. It just, I don't know, it just seemed odd. Did anyone else pick up on that?
I didn't, but I'll look out for it when I do another rewatch of it.
But again, I'm glad. It almost feels like he has become the captain of the ship.
Basically,
strategy.
Rayner effectively is the captain, and Michael goes on the away missions. And
yeah,
I mean, I think we've said this before. Like, I'm enjoying the scenes on Discovery with Rayner in charge much more than Michael in charge. Anyway, back on the Breen ship then. Maul opens the thing and we lose a Breen officer into it, and it appears to open into, like, did they say another dimension or a pocket universe something?
I think it's a pocket universe.
Yeah. It's
a bit sort of like space.
We'll find out. Yeah, we're going to find out next week what the crack, like, is with all that. So we'll let that one play out.
I like the idea of pocket universes, because I think it's been well established that Optimus Prime has a pocket universe. So
yeah, and possibly Odo as well when he changes all his masks and everything. So
yeah, so I'm quite happy with pocket universes.
And then this prompts Maul to put Locke into a portable pattern buffer, which she can store on a bracelet.
Yeah, and I have no problem with this, because this
I have no problem with it. Yeah, but what it's clearly doing is setting up something for next week, because she ends up inside the pocket universe or whatever it is, and she's got Locke with her effectively.
Yeah.
So, I like the way it's done fairly subtly, and it's clearly laying the pieces for next week. But yeah, I think that's just something for us to be aware of going into next week, that Locke even though technically it's just Maul and Michael in there, Lockie's going to be in there as well, and yeah, I'm sure we'll see him next week.
And like in the time between Relics and now, so we're talking 800 years.
Yeah.
I'm quite happy for them to have established that. Putting someone into a pattern buffer is a perfectly legitimate way to keep them alive. That it's not just experimental anymore. Yeah, Scotty did it. How do you do it? Yeah, great. We've learnt that. Right, we have our own personal transports. Can we make it smaller, smaller, smaller? Yeah, we can do that now. I have no problem with it.
Yeah. And it means that we've got, like, I was going to say the two main villains, but the two... Basically, we've got Moll and Locke and Michael in there next episode.
I'd rather call them antagonists as opposed to villains.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
Really villains.
No.
Clearly, by the end, they're going to come good. I mean, I'd be amazed if they don't. But yeah.
And then we get the quite cool scene where they're on the shuttle. And I like the dialogue where they say, science now, problem later. And
problem later or explanation later.
I think it's problem later. And
It's like we've problem got to
now,
be
now problem to now, science later. Sorry, I got it the wrong way around.
No, it's fine. And but then the next second, someone goes like, "But how?" It's like she goes, "Sorry." They go. Problem.
But
now,
I like that later. Because that's Adira taking a bit of control of it and going, "Nope, you've told me that this is how we deliver the information. I'm going
to
do it that way."
We need to do this I like now. That. I could explain it all to you, but it'll take me ages. I've worked this out in my head like that, but for me to explain how I've worked out, it'll take too long. We do it now. Go.
And that's Adira's way of showing.
Yeah,
that's Adira's way of going, right, lesson learned. You pick me up on that. I've now learned. Problem now, science later. So I really liked that.
Yeah.
And this all leads to them beaming down where there's already some Breen. And I didn't put my Breen subtitles on, so I had to imagine what they were saying.
Well, do you know what really annoys
me?
What really annoys me, right? Let's just add to the problem from last week, because A, it's bullshit that they're assuming that we all speak Breen. Don't know what that's about. But they translate some of it, but not others. Some of it looks garbled,
some of it
or whatever.
And then it's garbled.
Either decode it or don't. Make your mind up what you're doing. And if whatever you're decoding, put on the screen so we can.
Exactly. I could not be bothered putting my subtitles on.
I tried it and it was saying electronic garble. And I just thought.
Yeah, I saw that. And I was
sub this.
But there are two or three lines which they do decode, none of which you need for this one. Last one, it actually added a little bit. This week, pretty much nothing. You didn't miss anything this week at all.
To me, it's just ridiculous.
Yeah.
We've got this language, and your captions for it are electronic garble. No, tell us what it bloody is, or don't.
Yeah.
It's just...
Yeah, it's just bad... We think it's like Squeeze said last week that it's a thing with Paramount that they don't want to have to localize it on the actual screen to everything. So instead, they've just said, right, you either put your subtitles on or not. And it's like, no, I'm pretty sure that the episode won't. But I imagine originally the episode will have been made with the intent of there being subtitles there. And it's the way they've chosen to present it to us that's taken that away, which is incredibly annoying.
Do you know, it's almost like Paramount can't make a decent app. I mean,
it is almost like that. Yeah. Cool thing, though, I know it's become sort of the norm for the way you film this kind of thing since the Iron Man films, but they do the filming inside the helmet, and it is like the Iron Man helmet. So I enjoyed that. I thought that was.
Although there was a scene where they show the cut into all four of their masks.
Yeah,
and I did think it looked like either that they're about to hold up their Power Rangers rings and unite as a Megazord or something.
Cool.
Or, and I know I mixed my sci-fi metaphors there on purpose. Don't come at me. But it was either that, or it's like they were about to do ABBA Voyage, like from the pictures I've seen of that.
I'd have been happy with either.
It was weird.
Power Rangers or ABBA would have worked for me. Yeah. So the bit we've all been waiting to talk about while they're on the way, on the mission, Michael pulls Book aside and goes, all right, come on. Here we go. Let's talk about...
She just continues. She goes, no time for that bullshit. Sorry, we're on a mission. We can't stop and have a heart to heart in the middle of this because I just had a go at Stamets for this. This would be at most very, very hypocritical of me, if not to the point where I should be up on charges for wasting Starfleet's time. So she couldn't possibly.
I'm putting the mission in jeopardy.
I mean, I did fall asleep here and I dreamed, of course, because this couldn't have happened that she had a heart to heart with Book, but she'd never be that fucking unprofessional.
Yeah, it's not good writing, is it? I mean,
it's like, what's annoying is, we know Frakes in directing, and Frakes must have been batting his head against the wall when he's been told he's got to use some of this writing.
The thing is, if they'd have made it really clear that whatever they're trying to do can't be done for a couple of minutes, then you could have had Michael go, right, well, we've got time, so I'm going to talk about it. But she actively pulls him away from where they're going.
Saying this is not a good time for this.
Let's have this chat. And the chat itself's pretty lame because she explains all this stuff. Like, I've been pushing you away because I was scared. And Book goes, oh, yeah, me too. I did exactly the same thing. What? Where did that come from? That doesn't seem to fit with his character. It'd have been better if Book had said, I'm glad you finally admitted that to yourself. Can we move on now? You don't have to have him be the same as her in that, it can be just her that messed it up and Book being like, I gave you time to come to that realization. Let's get on with it. It's something like, I don't know.
Because the thing is, there was
I didn't enjoy this bit.
It was unnecessary. They're on a massively time-sensitive mission. And when you look at what happens at the end, is this a direct result of what happens here?
Well,
I'll
also throw in as well, because you were saying about the kind of lines that Frakes must have been just like, oh, do I have to do this one? But there was a few bits in here. So she comes up with some really nice stuff about improvising when the translation doesn't work. So she just makes some stuff up to the Breen. Great stuff. I like those bits.
Yeah, that bit's fun.
But there's always lines he goes xenoanthropology, gift that keeps on giving. Okay, fine. But then she has to add, so she then adds, it's a gift that keeps on giving, as if that's a funny line at the end. It's like, well, what the fuck does that mean? Why, what?
It means...
Obviously, in the... was it 21st century there, from?
Yes.
Before Starfleet had made contact with the Breen.
Yeah, 22nd, 23rd?
Yeah. So 23rd. So she studied 23rd. Xenoanthropology before Starfleet knew about the Breen. And yeah, he's an expert on them.
Well always,
I'm
because
just
of course
that out there.
Of course, as soon as she was in the 31st century, I want to say again, we're getting a century. 32nd century. So as soon as they're in the 32nd century, obviously she absorbed all the knowledge of the time so that she is the expert above anyone who's from that time. I think it's so hard to believe about that, Admiral Elliot.
I think the gift that keeps on giving means basically you can show someone a Breen. And they'll have a Breen for now. But if you give them xenoanthropology, you'll have a Breen forever or something
I really love the fact that you called it xenoanthropology. Made it sound even fancier. It's like, oh, well, I believe your friend's
the gift that
Xeno.
Keeps on giving. Anyway, back to Raina.
Well, I went Xeno. I like the fact that it's it just added more import to what Captain Jim there was saying. It's like, maybe you'll. Finally, it's pronounced xenoanthropology. And I know you weren't doing that, but it just is amusing in my head.
It's that we keep coming back to lazy writing, and just saying somebody studied something doesn't mean you're an expert on the entire thing, especially when that subject has moved on 1,000 years.
That's a good point.
But it's like it is lazy writing because it's like they wanted a pithy line at the end of this, a little kind of button on the scene. and they've just written anything for her to say in a, like, well, it's a bit like this.
You know what she could have said? I can think of two words that she could have said that would have been so much better than saying it's the gift that keeps on giving, but she didn't say them, so never mind.
Well, that would be even weird in this situation if
I don't care. Like, no, it'd have been better. It'd have been, hey, xenoanthropology, let's fly.
Oh, we haven't time for this, though.
To anything.
I can think of a way it would fit. It's like, anyway, look, we don't have the time for this heart to heart. Let's fly. You know,
yeah, that there you go. That's so much better. Yeah. Anyway, back on Discovery with Rayna being awesome again. There's the bit where Tilly's talking to him and he sort of gives Tilly a bit of praise, but then he says, like, I don't want this warm and fuzzy encouragement.
It's beautiful. It's the way he kind of like just scoops up his face, look.
It's like, just why you made me pissed off as soon as you say, well, you showed promise and you deserve it. And I could tolerate being in a foxhole with you.
I wouldn't kill you.
Without killing you. As long as you stop all this warm and fuzzy encouragement.
Well, I don't need
it's great.
And, you know, and actually, I think he's right. I don't think he does need. I don't he think doesn't. Anything she says here changes at the end. The fact that he's pumped up, he's ready to do this. So he jumps in the chair. It's his moment. It kind of, it's almost like trying to give her his moment. I don't think that.
It doesn't need her for it.
No,
he
doesn't.
Like, I honestly think that he made the first officer just so he could tell her that he's that close to killing her if she doesn't back
up. I would even give you.
It's like, I am going to kill you if you don't sort your attitude out.
I would even give you, if they had, just before he sat down in the seat, when he's going, it's like, he's a bit pumped up about the plan. If he goes, like, what the hell? This one's for you, Red. And he jumps in the chair then. I would have given you, it would have worked. But it's like, as it is, really, her advice doesn't seem to have any impact on it. Like,
no,
if he was doing it to give it to her, I'd even give you that as a kind of fun moment. It doesn't have to be for any plot.
No, I don't think her advice does help Rayna, but I think
I honestly think he's promoted her just so he can tell her, sort out your attitude. I don't like it. I'm that close to giving you a fucking right good slap.
I thought it was just sweet, but I don't know. I felt like if you're going to have it there, you need to button it. Like, you know, put a button on it, not button it and then you're saying, but like, it's like it needs just something on the end which ties it then to him then sitting in the chair. If you're going to have that be the character moment. I think you're right. It's a wonderful character moment, but it feels weird that, like, it really feels like it's trying to suggest that character moment is why he's sat in the chair, which doesn't really follow when you see it.
I think it follows that he's basically telling them, look, I know how to do my job. I don't need you to tell you. When it's time to sit in the chair, I will sit in the chair, but now I don't need to sit in the chair at the moment. I'm not pacing around. I'm actually coming to every station and talking to the person directly.
Guys were telling me I wasn't doing enough.
I'm actually coming and to all your stations as I need things doing and seeing how things are, because the person I'm going to is the most important person at the time.
all that you do have to know, though, is later on, when Book's kind of riding the turbo lift back up to the bridge, or, you know, he's getting back on board, you know, that guy from the bridge is there going, like, and you know, then he just sat in the chair. He just sat in it.
Another bit that I really like with Rayna is when he sort of relays his plan to Michael, and Michael just sort of cuts him off and says, I trust you, do it. And I thought that was really good to show how their relationship's evolved now, that she does genuinely trust him.
You've got an idea to sort this out. I fucked up because I decided to have a heart to heart with my ex-boyfriend, hopefully to be boyfriend again.
But the fact that she validates him by not listening to him, you know, it's, I don't even need to hear it. I trust you that much that, just do it. You know, I really like that.
We might have time to have a conversation about this, but I just spanked 5 minutes just having a little chat, you know, which could have waited. Well, of course
you did. There's a fun bit with Book where he's got to distract the guard, and then he ends up sort of getting invited to this religious ceremony, possibly on a date. You know, it's just weird that we knew nothing about the Breen and we're dropping in all this weird cultural stuff that we're starting to piece together. Right, they've got this big religious festival, and he says, "Do you want to come as one of my whatever the word is?" So,
hey, look, I can make room in the oil bath, which is just a
I imagine with them having two states, solid and liquid. They're obviously not shapeshifters yet, where they can move into different shapes when they become solid, but they have a solid and liquid state. So imagine that an orgy with Breens is actually quite fun, because you're just going to liquid state in a pool together.
Well, maybe and they do, maybe they don't.
Maybe that's what it all is, why you have a number of them joined together.
Maybe, yeah.
Yeah, the oil helps separate them out later because...
Yeah, I can make room in the oil thing. I'll go in as a liquid instead of a solid, so there'll be room in there, yeah.
I also kind of like, I do love moments where they have that kind of idea of like a cultural misunderstanding kind of moment. Like, so it is like, it's like, hey, yeah, so I could go along with you. Well, make room in the oil bath. It's like, whoa, wait a minute. It's like,
I thought that was quite good,
great Burnham line there, where it's like, hey, look, I could take my time if you want to go for that oil bath.
Yeah, and she's like flirting, interesting. Yeah. Which I thought was good. That's good. So then, Mole catches up with them, rumbles the ruse that Raina tried saying Michael was dead. And then she sort of does this thing where she kind of speaks in code to Raina, and he's like, I've got it. She wants me to crash into there, put them all out in space and beam them up.
And by the way, can I just say as well, because we've established this real fate of the universe kind of stuff, if the wrong people get hold of this tech, it's going to be deadly. And so what does she do? She, like, as soon as Mole bursts into the room, it's like, well, we better stop everything just in case of her. Like, the stakes are that high. I know it's not very Starfleet to, like, obviously you want to save everyone, but with the stakes, do you think, I think that's the dickhead move. It's the wrong move, like, to jump in there. Yeah. You're about to beam in space to beam on boards, which might have saved her if Mole gets in there in time. Menage a trois oil baths with C-3PO from David there. Nice.
I do like, just for the visual, that we're going to crash the ship into the thing, and it, you know, it's a great action sequence.
Oh, beautiful.
And there's a good bit where Stamets is working it out, and Culber says, like, are you sure this is going to work? And he says, math doesn't lie. And again, that's just a very good character moment for him.
Yeah.
And it almost plays into the Culber's spiritual awakening that we seem to have forgotten about, but never mind.
Yeah.
But it's almost like him going, you know, no, my faith is in this, and you know, I know that if I work this out, it will work. And I just think that it's really good. And it's
last episode, there's going to be some spiritual moment, because obviously, the tech is spiritually based. But you're right, they totally let that storyline go because they are not consistent with stuff like this. But yeah, it'll come back.
But it's good that, you know, Stamets doesn't do a lot this episode, but he had them great moments where he's worried about Adira. And he's got this great moment where he's just asserting, if I do this right, it will work, because science doesn't lie. Yeah. You know, it's
brilliant. Anytime you want to throw in the Stamets Colbert family, I am more than happy to see it. Like, they can just be on screen. Again, though, they don't really... I think they did right by not giving them too much in this episode, because there was so much going on.
Yeah, I think so.
They just had to be there, like... and they had some interesting stuff to do when they're on screen. But like we were saying with Saru and the Ambassador, like, there's no reason why they couldn't have had the same sort of thing. They don't always have to be in conflict. That was a good example of where they were just there being there.
Yeah.
And I mean, the only thing I thought was a bit weird was earlier on, Colbert goes, because I know they're establishing they're a family and they care about each other. Lovely, beautiful. But it's kind of weird where he goes, seems like just yesterday I was beaming down a mess. And it's like, look, I know you're a family now, but you've known each other for 3 years. It's not like she was a toddler and you were like, they were a toddler and you were going away on a mission.
No, true.
That seemed a little forced to me.
And they were part of like the Earth Defense Force or something before they joined that. So they've probably been in much trickier scrapes than
And I can sort of speak to it because I entered my children's life because they were my stepkids from where I was married. I entered into their lives a few years later. So yeah, of course I was worried when they were going out and stuff. But it would be like me references, like, seems like just yesterday I was changing your nappies. Like, I never did that.
I know what you mean. Yeah.
It seemed like just forcing in a situation they were never in.
It did.
It was beautiful enough without it, I thought.
And then we get to work setting up what's going to happen for next week. So we've got Moll jumps into the thing. Michael jumps into the thing. Everything blows up. They don't manage to beam the thing over.
They destroyed the green ship, though, didn't they?
Think so. Did they destroy it completely?
Oh, I thought it just got damaged. I thought they'd proper blown it up because through. Quite happy just staying there.
Oh, I just thought because the bay which Discovery flew into,
yeah,
that was blown up. I assumed they were crippled enough that they weren't in any.
Yeah, I thought that.
I did quite like that next week, no doubt. I did also quite like, and I don't feel like this needed any explanation, where the kind of like obelisk, whatever you want to call it, flows up in space and explodes out and becomes the entranceway in space.
Yeah, becomes whatever it is.
That's nice. Yeah. And that is one example where I think you don't need an explanation. It's just can just extrapolate that that's just what happens. Like, it's clear that
whatever the tech is inside the shell. And so, yeah, it bursts out of it, and that leaves us, which is where we do get the great scene at the end where you've got Rayner, our captain's in there and the tech's in there. We need to work all this out and let's do this.
Oh.
Which is a great ending to the episode.
Oh, man. Like, I have never found a starship captain. And I'm just going to say it's so hot. Like, I'm sorry. I don't know any guys, but like, he was an attractive man in that moment. Like, there was just something just so captivating about him. Like, you know, like, you would have followed him anywhere. More so, and I do not say this lightly, more so than Picard in All Good Things. He talks those people into basically putting their spuds on the Barbie when they've just met him from their perspective. And you kind of believe it. In this moment, like, just, you would have followed this guy anywhere. Like, it's like, we're going to do this. Yeah, yeah, we are.
Well, I honestly think this is where Izoth's absolutely coming to his element of this is why he was a captain. Starfleet were wrong to get rid of him as a captain.
I'd take that away. Yeah. I would disagree with that only slightly, because I think this is so much like he's found his love by taking the captaincy away. He's found his love for the job outside of. He was just so buried down in his hate. I feel like that's why I feel like him and we were saying this previously. That's why him and Bernard work so well together. She is all about the feelings and emotions, and he's all about the business. And they both need to learn some of that from each other, because she needs to be more business. Well, like, this episode proves it, and he needs to learn that. No, you do have to listen to people. Like, I think he once was like this, and he got cut off by all his.
That's it. I think he got
him, and it's just they just cracked his shell, and he was in there, and actually, hats off to Burnham for finding that solution that Starfleet didn't think of. Like, they probably didn't want to insult him by demoting him, and didn't think of that solution where she did. So it's actually to her credit.
Yeah, it's worked, and it's, you know, you. I'm excited to see what he's going to do next week. You know, there's a sense of danger with Rayner that you don't get with Michael because of the way she's been written. It's like, well, of course Michael will fix everything. Whereas Rayner, it's like,
I've got a sense he's going to kick ass in a major way.
I think he's going to. Yeah. I think that other Primarch's going to turn up and he's going to get.
And he's going to get his revenge.
Well, maybe it'll be him sparing the Primarch, actually, you know, and that'll be. That's a very Starfleet thing.
His personal redemption story.
Yeah, because I don't think anyone who's watched this show or who knows this can say that we're kind of scared of emotion on our stuff. We love. We enjoy that, but there was such a thing with Burnham where it's like she's literally crying on the bridge in front of everyone, and it's like it came out and then she withdrew to keep a professional distance, which you need as captain, just openly crying on the bridge, and it's like I'm sorry, but that does lose something when you're the captain. You have to be able to hold stuff together. He can do that, but now we can show emotion and it doesn't take away. It's like there's a way of doing it. And that's what I'm loving about this series. In fact, someone actually suggested that maybe, like, it was one of the online comments, so sorry, I don't know who it is. If you're watching, big up to you. But they said, it's like, oh, does anyone think that Burnham's going to be made admiral at the end? I kind of wanted to. She can go be an admiral and Rainer can have the Discovery. I just think he
That'd be fine. Yeah.
I wouldn't mind that as her destiny.
Maybe he's been set up to be the captain of the Discovery.
I could see it finishing there,
So
he becomes an admiral and still goes on away missions.
And that probably gives them the route into having Burnham be able to do episodes in the Academy series because she's an admiral based somewhere else or whatever.
Yeah,
or come on.
But it also gives Rainer, and will we give, like, I'd rather Rainer didn't become captain because I'd rather him become somewhere else so we can have more of him in the Academy series.
Yeah. Maybe we'll get a Rainer TV movie.
Oh, that'd be good.
I would love that. I really hope he is and like anything I've seen online has been really positive, but I just hope he's being seen by enough people of how good he is, like, and I'm sure he is, but
So that about wraps up the penultimate episode of Discovery. We've got the finale coming up next week, but in the meantime, you can get in touch with us. We're at RetrekPod. You can email us, retrekpod@gmail.com. You can find us on all of the socials, including Retrek Model Studios on YouTube.
Yeah, I got a video out this week. If anyone saw it, I finished the lighting for the sort of more of the Doomsday Machine.
Looking fantastic.
It is brilliant.
I have been doing some more work on the actual... I've started making another video. I'm doing some more work on the main body. Might start painting it, but I won't get a video out this week because some of us have to go to the UK Games Expo. So
we do, for our sins. We have. And Amit Gav is demoing a brand new Star Trek tabletop game. Ooh. So we're going to go check that out.
We are going to go play that.
Right, I'm definitely going to tune into that video.
And we also played a Star Trek game with Book Tom.
It's not officially a Star Trek game, but we are doing
a
bridge. Yeah, it's a bridge simulator. So it's pretty much a Star Trek game. But I'm not sure how it'll work with it being a prototype game. I don't know if we'll be allowed to show it that Gav's demoing, but with his permission, we may be able to film a little video for the YouTube, the Retrek YouTube channel of this new Star Trek game. So keep your eye on the YouTube page, and if we can do that, we will do that. But I'm not sure because some of the games are shown at the expo but not allowed to be shown elsewhere yet. So we'll keep you updated on that one. Dr. Squee, what have we got going on the Dr. Squee show?
Well, as we've been doing, Dr. Squee show has made way for Gallifrey Stands, our Doctor Who version of Dr. Squee show, where we talk about different episodes. This week just gone, we were talking about 73 Yards, which was a corker of an episode.
There's an episode that needed a bit more explanation at the end, but
honestly, if you get a chance, do check out. I don't often say this, but do check out our breakdown of it, because the Netheads podcast did come up with some really good stuff.
Excellent. Okay,
well, I do just wanted, before I hand over to Elliot, just say quickly, this week though, on Monday, I'll be joined by you gents talking about which I forget the name of, but...
I forget the name of it, but...
Or something like that. Dot and Bubble.
I do know why Newty wasn't in 73 Yards much. They had to write it that way because he was filming Sex Education.
I mean, to be honest with you, this is something I've been saying. It's like, not only was he doing that, but also... we've literally just had him dancing at the Oscars because he was in Barbie's One of the Kens. Like, yeah. This guy is in such popular demand. If people are getting pissy, especially after we just had an episode where we stuck a landmine, we had nothing but shooty for the entire hour. Now you're getting pissy because we have a Dr. Light episode, which they've done before. It's like, I'm sorry, mate, but the reason why we got him is because they were probably like this with the schedule and they filmed two series back.
I thought it was a great episode, but I was a little bit annoyed by the ending because I felt like, I feel like with any mystery, there is a contract between the viewer and the show that you're going to get some payoff. And I don't mind a bit of ambiguity, but I felt like they took a little bit. Anyway.
I think we have to see the whole series before we might get the answer.
I would say that, because there's two bits. One is that it is possible that they're going to explain stuff later because they've got this whole God storyline going through it. But also, we translated the bit which it was thanks to someone commenting. They said, oh, I thought it was American Sign Language, maybe the kind of symbols that the woman was throwing out. And I go, oh, well, if anything, it would be British Sign Language, surely, because it's a British. And they looked out, but it was British Sign Language. We decoded what it said.
Right. So check that out on Gallifrey Stands, and we'll be on next week to talk about the new episode. But until then, let's fly.
Let's do this.
Let's fly.